Florida ranks at or near the bottom when it comes to per capita funding for mental health services in the U.S., and some say the lack of services is a ticking time bomb. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at baycareevents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WSF Public Media, I'm Carson Cooper. Those are the words of Denise Marzullo, the president of Mental Health America of Northeast Florida, who predicted something tragic is going to happen if we don't do something. Former Circuit Judge Belvin Perry of Casey Anthony fame wondered aloud last year whether it would take a mass shooting before Florida decides to make mental health funding a priority. Many will say that act has already taken place, the tragic murder of 5-year-old Phoebe Johnchuk, apparently at the hands of her father. He's been charged with first-degree murder. Pinellas County Sheriff Bob Gualtieri, welcome to Florida Matters.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
I want to talk more about the Johnchuk case in just a moment, but first, your counterpart in Duval County, Jacksonville Sheriff John Rutherford, says it is time to take the burden off law enforcement and get medical professionals more involved in the care of mentally ill. Do you see that imbalance in Pinellas County or overall around the state?
Absolutely. Pinellas County statewide and nationwide, because the jails have become de facto mental health facilities when they're really not. There's really no treatment and not the right kind of treatment in jails, and jails aren't designed for that. So it's become a huge burden on the jails and the criminal justice system.
Lee County Commissioner Bob Jane said his county's largest mental health hospital is Lee County Jail.
Probably true. So many of the people, we have an average daily population of just under 3,000 people in the Pinellas County Jail every day. And the good majority of them have mental health problems and or substance abuse and alcohol problems, which equate to mental health issues in many respects. So it's just about everybody's touched by it in some fashion that's in that jail.
And usually that first touch comes to law enforcement. They're usually the first people that the mentally ill encounter. And I got to believe your deputies are specially trained to handle mentally ill patients.
Well, it's true that it's usually the first contact is law enforcement when they're in crisis because of the behavior that they engage in. And we try to have as many deputies as we can, CIT or crisis intervention team trained, so they can recognize what that behavior is. And it's not criminal behavior, but it's behavioral or mental health related, and to keep them out of the jail and put them into that behavioral mental health system. That's the goal. Law enforcement, I think, in this area and around the state does a decent job, good job, but we can do better, and we need to do better at making sure those people don't go into the criminal justice system when they don't belong there.
Linda McKinnon is the president and CEO of the nonprofit Central Florida Behavioral Health Network. Welcome to Florida Matters.
Thank you.
And your job is what? To make sure that state money is spent wisely?
Yes. Central Florida is one of 7 managing entities across the state of Florida. We were formed by the legislature to assure that funds are used appropriately, and that we provide quality services and access to services for persons who have no other means to pay.
Now, how does that money make its way from, I guess it's the DCF at the top, right?
Yes.
How does it make its way down to the local level?
DCF appropriates those dollars through Central Florida's contract. It's about $156 million a year for both substance abuse and mental health treatment and prevention services. In turn, Central Florida contracts with approximately 82 providers across the 14-county area to provide those mental health and substance abuse treatment services.
Now, more than half the money, this is a figure I came across, more than half the money Florida spends on mental health is spent on keeping the mentally ill locked up and not on preventative measures. Is that correct?
That's accurate. And what we know is that it costs about $72,000 for an average length of stay in a state civil mental health hospital, and that's for about a 10-month length of stay. for all those people, and last year we were able to divert about 115 people from the state mental health facilities. And we do that primarily through our FACT teams that are very assertive community treatment teams, hospitals without walls. The cost of keeping someone in the community successfully is about $11,000 for the same period of time. So it's a much better, more effective, and cost-effective way of treating folks.
Barbara Dare is the president and CEO of Suncoast Center in Pinellas County. Welcome to Florida Matters.
Thank you.
So in an ideal world, if the shift were to swing from shift over to prevention rather than keeping the mentally ill locked up, specifically, how would prevention work?
Well, in a perfect world, whenever anyone went to get any kind of health assessment, their annual checkup, they would also have an emotional wellness checkup. And we would there identify any issues and problems, not only with the individual, but maybe with members of their family. So then we could get them into the lowest level, most cost-effective services available, which would be individual therapy and psychiatric assessment and potentially medication. Treatment works. It's very effective. We have lots of cases in which people were diverted from the jail and from the crisis centers. And if they end up in either of those locations, the trauma that happens to them takes for many years for them to recuperate from and costs a lot more.
Now, Sheriff Gualtieri, I think Linda or Barbara could confirm this. I think Florida ranks, what, 49th or 50th, is it? It seems
49th.
To float back and forth in per capita funding for mental health services in the U.S. Now, most Northeast states, I looked this up, spend six times the amount that Florida does. Is there proof, a direct correlation, that it's mainly a money thing or and not how it's allocated?
Well, I, from my perspective, I think it's both. It certainly is a money thing. There's not enough. And I think that the lack of funding also drives some of the decisions on what's being done or not being done. But I also believe that with anything is that we should also look at the dollars that are being spent and make sure they're being spent properly. So, and most effectively, and in evidence-based, evidence-driven, outcome-driven program. So I think that anytime you're looking at something as massive as this, you need to make sure that it's adequately funded, but you need to make sure that it's rightly funded and it's going to the right people who are going to drive the right outcomes. So it's a combination of both.
Based on what you've seen, what is working in Florida that needs more funding?
Well, as an example, I think the crisis intervention teams overall are working. And that's where law enforcement officers are trained to assess and recognize behaviors being behavioral health or mental health related and not criminal per se. As an example, there's 67 sheriff's offices in the state of Florida. Only about 40 participate in CIT. There's thousands of police departments. Only some participate. So while those that are doing it okay and well in some respects, there's room for more. And the goal should be is to have 100% participation. So that would be an area where we're doing it well, but there's definitely room for improvement. And what does it take to do that? Commitment, but it takes money.
Linda McKinnon, according to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and these are from surveys taken in 2011 and 2012, nearly 17% of people in Florida experience the presence of a mental or behavioral or emotional disorder during that given year, 17%. How do you gauge the mental health of a population?
What we can gauge is the number of people that we are able to serve. And as I said, through our communities last year, we served about 120,000 people. That is a tip of the iceberg. Unfortunately, because of the funding restrictions in Florida, beyond being 49th in funding, we're also the third highest state for the uninsured. So we have a huge population of people trying to access services. In our system, pretty much the way in is through either being in crisis and the crisis centers or through police action and the jails. And that's sort of the equivalent of if I had a heart disease, mm-hmm. waiting until I had a massive heart attack to be able to get help. What we would like to do is flip that paradigm to what Barbara was talking about of early assessment, early identification, and dealing with the issues and helping people get back on their feet before they are in crisis or in the jail.
Barbara, there you're nodding your head there. Let's talk about state funding. In 2012, the Department of Children and Families admitted it has not been able to provide services to 170,000 adults and 40,000 children with serious mental illnesses. The Senate voted to reduce funding of the mental health services budget by $76 million. And this is sort of what I asked Sheriff Walter Erie about. Is it the funding, or are there better ways to spend the money that we have?
Well, without the funding, you cannot provide as many of the better services that you need to provide. So I agree with him. It's really both. We get up to 250 requests for services a week at our organization. We cannot accommodate all of those requests for services. However, we do have some programs that work very effectively. For instance, Linda had mentioned the FACT team, which is a group. We have a psychiatrist, we have an employment specialist, we have a therapist. They go to their homes, they work with these individuals who have been in the hospital and in jail, and they work very closely with them. And I have many examples of individuals. For instance, I have a 37-year-old man who had been in jail multiple times. He had been in psychiatric hospital several times. He had ongoing substance abuse dependency disorders, also serious suicide attempts, including, for instance, trying to shoot himself in the abdomen.
Mm-hmm.
We brought him on our team. We provided services, including long-term injectable medications, which are highly effective. He has had no further jail stays. He has been hospitalized once, but he is doing well. He is no longer using substances. He's living independently, and he actually now is such a positive influence for other patients in the house he lives in. He is running a co-occurring disorder support group. So we have examples of where this treatment really is effective and it really works for mental health and substance abuse services, but it's not free.
Sheriff Gualtieri, it's been reported that nearly two-thirds of the state's mentally ill go untreated. Many do end up behind bars. What specifically are you seeing in jails?
Well, and maybe it's just because of where we sit, but from my view, and I think it's fantastic, the example that Barbara just gave, but I see that as the anomaly, and because what we see more and more is the opposite of that situation, and maybe it's because everything rolls into us. When nobody can get help anywhere else, it comes to us. Where their problems are massive, they come to us. So I see a system where there's need for much more of what Barbara's talking about, and there's a huge void there. Give you an example. A couple weeks ago, we had a woman who came at the deputies with a steak knife and was trying to stab them. Frankly, the deputies under those circumstances, when she raised that knife over her head and was charging at them, would have been justified in using deadly force. Luckily, we had an experienced sergeant there and a CIT-trained deputy, and at their own potential peril, took evasive action, didn't shoot her, were able to disarm her, and they didn't charge her criminally. They took her into custody under the state's Baker Act law, which is an involuntary assessment period. And when she went to the receiving facility, all she did is to see a psychiatrist via Skype. And within 72 hours, she was released. They gave her a prescription. She never got it filled. She's back out on the street. And that's a hole. That's a void. That's a problem within the system. And, you know, the laws are in place where they can go to the court and seek that person to stay in custody longer than that assessment period. But so much of it, from where I see it, is crisis stabilization, but there's that void in long-term care, follow-up, aftercare, the FACT teams to be able to go out. This woman got nothing. Mm-hmm. She easily could have been dead, and the deputies handled it the way it should have been handled, but she didn't get anything out of the system.
Linda McKinnon, there has been a lot of debate over accepting Medicaid dollars from the federal government over Obamacare. Some are calling for the state to accept that money. A former Medicaid official told lawmakers last year that an expansion would move 200,000 mentally ill Floridians from DCF to Medicaid, which would free up millions of dollars for community-based treatment programs. Does that sound to you like a feasible approach? Would that actually work that way?
I believe that if Medicaid were expanded along with the rates that are paid for Medicaid, that would increase our capacity. About 63% of the funds currently that come through DCF are spent on community programs, housing, support programs, wraparound supports, medications that help keep people stable in the community. Medicaid pays for purely physical treatment services, and the population that we serve really requires a lot more than just medications and doctor visits. So it would, in fact, free up those dollars to more successfully wrap around people. However, in Florida, as I said, we also have the third highest number of uninsured. We have a very large undocumented population who will never be eligible for those benefits. And we have to find a better way or continue resourcing the services to those people.
Barbara Dare, Suncoast Center focuses on child abuse, behavioral health, and family stability. Some school superintendents around the state say, like law enforcement, they too ought not be the primary providers of mental health services. But schools do play a very important role in identifying extreme cases and connecting them to mental health resources.
We work very closely with the school system, as many of the providers do in our community and across the state, and actually have therapists in a number of elementary and high schools. And you're right, it is not their job to be providing the mental health services, but again, there's not adequate funding or linkage to those services in order to meet all the needs that are out there in the community.
Florida ranks near the bottom when it comes to per capita funding for mental health services in the U.S. We're talking about what this means and how it should be addressed. I'm Carson Cooper. This is Florida Matters. My guests are Linda McKinnon of the Central Florida Behavioral Health Network, Barbara Dare with Suncoast Center in Pinellas County, and Pinellas County Sheriff Bob Gualtieri. Florida ranks at or near the bottom when it comes to per capita funding for mental health services in the U.S. Some say the lack of services is a ticking time bomb. Linda McKinnon, a case that shocked the Bay Area in January, the murder of 5-year-old Phoebe Johnchuck. Her father, John Johnchuck, is accused of throwing her off a bridge. If John Johnchuck is a symptom of something wrong with the system, what is it?
What occurred in that situation was the issue was called in to the Florida hotline. It was not prioritized at that time as being dangerous by the hotline. Since that time, the Department of Children and Families and the secretary has taken a new approach that any referral of a person in custody of a child where it appears that there is a dangerous situation will be responded to by that hotline within 4 hours.
Barbara Dare, most everyone agrees that John Johnchuck was undergoing a psychotic episode, but it's what happened or didn't happen in the hours and the days before. Everyone who ran into him that day seems to have a different take on his condition. His lawyer said he was off the deep end and feared for his daughter's life that day, hours before. However, others said he seemed fine. I know the DCF is looking into this, but how could this have been avoided?
I think there are several aspects to this. One is the fact that mental illness is a disease of the brain, and it's a complicated disease, and people don't have a general knowledge of symptoms of mental illness and mental health, so we need to do a lot more education on that, like what's happening with the CIT training for the officers. I also think that if we had adequate services to where we have case managers who go out to the home and do assessments, make sure our clients are taking their medication, eating, keeping a clean house, looking for symptoms, bringing them into the office to see a psychiatrist if they're noticing anything that is causing them distress so that we can get their medication adjusted. It's a very complicated situation. And like the sheriff said, it's they do have episodes where they can become psychotic and then also become more stable. And we have to watch that long term and provide services, consistent services long term.
Sheriff Gualtieri, the John Chuck case was mainly handled by St. Petersburg Police and Hillsborough agencies. But from your vantage point in Pinellas County, where did the system break down, or did it break down? Some say you just cannot prevent every single tragedy.
Well, and that's true. You can't. There's no perfect system, and sometimes bad things are going to happen. You know, in this situation, and again, I have no familiarity with it, but I'll just talk in general terms. When law enforcement is called, those law enforcement, and there was law enforcement contact with him. We know that from the published reports. But you're relying on law enforcement officers to do a critical assessment. In order for it to trigger a law enforcement officer taking somebody into custody, the thing's blowing up. Mm-hmm. They're in crisis. And by their actions and their comments, you're relying on a deputy sheriff or police officer to make a determination as to whether that person is a danger to themselves or others. And in that few minutes, literally sometimes, you got to rely on their actions and statements. And it gets back to the point that you raised a few minutes ago about their civil rights and about their rights as citizens. And you're talking about a cop that's got to make a judgment call is that should they deprive them of their freedom and take them into custody. And if somebody is not at that moment showing crisis that they are a danger, saying, no, I'm not going to kill myself. No, I'm not going to hurt my kid. No, I haven't. And there's nothing that anybody has seen or they can provide them that information, then they can't and shouldn't take them into custody. You know, could that person be manipulating the law enforcement officer? Absolutely. But law enforcement officers are not mental health professionals. And, you know, in some respects, and it's the nature of the job of what we do, we're asked to be the, you know, jack of all trades. And so so they're trying to do the best they can with the knowledge they have, the skills they have, and what's presented to them. And so in order to consider it, we need to know all of the facts that was presented to those deputies. And that's the only way we know. But so in a general sense, this happens every day. I mean, we run these calls in Pinellas County and everywhere multiple times a day. This process is gone through where there's an assessment. And, of course, we always hope we get it right.
Yeah.
But sometimes you do the best you can and bad things happen.
Linda McKinnon, the state funding for basic mental health services has been cut by more than $15 million since 2012. Prior to that, funding was flat for about 25 years. The tangible effects of that range from what? Clinics that run out of drugs? What?
We have very limited capacity to pay for medications. We have mental health centers, especially in some of our more rural areas, that are very at risk of closure because there is not the funding to support them any longer. We have issues of people not being able to access services, people being discharged. We work very hard through the network to try to assure linkage to services. So all of our CSU providers are required to obtain a follow-up appointment for people within 7 days of discharge. And we assure that. And that does occur. However, the limited capacity that we have in Florida, especially with clinicians and with physicians, psychiatrists, children's psychiatry, we have a very limited capacity in terms of numbers of professionals that are working in this system, in the publicly funded system. So we may be able to get someone a follow-up service with a case manager or a clinician, but they can't get into the doctor.
Do you think we have a public awareness issue with mental health? You're shaking your head. Yes.
Absolutely, we do. The other access problem we have is people don't realize that they're having psychiatric issues. Sometimes themselves, others have to tell them that. But when they go to access services, they wait until it's almost at a crisis point.
Intervention. How do we identify a coworker, a friend, a family member who might have issues that could lead them down a really bad road? What do we, and then what do we do with that information?
I think if you notice that somebody looks more tired than they normally do in the past, they're not speaking properly, they appear anxious or depressed, that you just need to ask them, how are you? Can I help? And listen to them. And then if you feel like there are certain symptoms or signs of distress, recommend them maybe reaching out if they're at work to the EAP program. Maybe it would help if you talk to someone. Or maybe you want to share this with your family or friends. But don't just turn around and ignore them, because they can exacerbate and become extremely problematic. So I think becoming more familiar with symptoms that you can notice. A lot of times people are very private because there's huge stigma attached to mental illness. So people are afraid to tell somebody what kind of issues or problems that they have. But unless you talk about them and get help for them, nothing will ever change.
Sheriff Gualtieri, what do lawmakers need to do, and when do they need to do it?
Well, now, and the opportunity is coming up with this session. You look at, get back to one of the first questions you asked about, do we need more money and or do we need to do it differently? And the answer is both. In 2013, in the Baker Act system in the state of Florida, there were over 170,000 Baker Acts. A high number of those were recidivists, people, and you have some in Pinellas County, and I've got the data, you have some in Pinellas County that are in 1 year that are Baker Act 11, 12, 13, 14 times. When somebody's being Baker Acted 10 to 15 times, that's where, and it's a strong term, the system's broken, but something's wrong. And somebody needs to intervene. Somebody needs to stop that because, one, the person's in crisis. Something is not being addressed. And before you end up in a tragedy and it gets worse. So, again, what does it take? It takes resources. Resources mean money. But it's got to be done in the right way, evidence-based, results-driven. And that's what I think that the legislature should do, is to encourage that and support that.
Linda McKinnon with the Central Florida Behavioral Health Network, Barbara Dare with Suncoast Center in Pinellas County, and Pinellas County Sheriff Bob Gualtieri. Very interesting discussion. Thank you all for joining me on Florida Matters.
Thank you very much. We appreciate you getting the word out.
Now, over the next few weeks, we'll be taking a look at the upcoming legislative session, and we would love to know what you think your lawmakers should be doing in Tallahassee this year. Call and leave us a message at 813-974-8652. That's 813-974-8652. You can also connect with us on Twitter. We are at Florida Matters, and you can leave comments on the WUSF Public Media Facebook page. Florida Matters is produced by Lottie Watts, engineered by Craig George, and is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Kirsten Cooper. Thanks for listening.